Today's interview is with Nikki White. Nikki White, I like to joke, is my business mum. She's kind of like my online business manager, but also kind of a mothering figure. She's there when I totally lose my shit and, you know, just going out of my brain with self-doubt. And she, you know, I don't know, she just keeps me together. She's like a beer-drinking witch, which I just love. So anyway, that's quite an intro. I hope she can live up to the expectation. Let me introduce you to Nikki White, my business mum. Welcome to Carlosophy's Stories Behind Success. I'm Carly Nimmo. It's so easy to fall into comparisonitis as an entrepreneur, and it can be paralyzing. In my own journey, I've come to understand that regardless of your level of success, fame, or fortune, we're all suffering from the same stories of fear, struggle, and failure. So let's talk about it.
My story is, I'm just going to start in business because that's where my focus is. So I was always a receptionist, secretary, PA, EA. I never went to uni. I just did the kind of support role, but loved it. Totally loved it because I was totally organized and it was just my thing. So I totally rocked that kind of world and did really, really well at that world. So I worked for an architecture firm, but then I moved into advertising. So I worked at George Pat's Advertising, which is a pretty big advertising agency. And I was just this pissy little secretary to one of the account managers. And then the chairman at the time, one of his PAs, he had two PAs and she left. And they actually came and asked me, did I want to be the chairman's PA? And I was like, I don't know, 23, 24. So that was a massive, you know, accolade for me to be the chairman of this massive advertising agency. Like, I used to be in the lift with James Packer and people like that because that's who he would be dealing with. So he's me, like, at 24 going, oh, you know, shit, all these people are here. And it was cool, though. Like, I really, really enjoyed it. Anyway, I met this guy at work and decided that I was going to fall in love with him, and he decided we were going to get married, and then he decided we were going to have kids straight away. So I became pregnant pretty fast after that. So I had my first kid at 27, which in today's day and age is pretty young, and really because he wanted to have kids. So he'd been married before. And he said, you know, if I'd stayed with my first wife, I would have had, you know, 12-year-olds by now. So I'm behind the eight ball and I need to have kids. So I was like, you know what, that's okay. I love him and I'll do this kind of stuff for him. So I had my first baby, and my parents lived in Queensland and we're in Sydney. So I had my first baby when I was 27, and at 4 weeks old, we were shipped off to Brisbane for his work. So I had a brand new baby and I got shipped off to Queensland, thinking that, you know, I'd be close to my mum and dad and that kind of stuff and that would all be great. But I just had this husband whose life didn't change. So what I actually realized in hindsight, and probably not at the time, was that he wanted the trophy wife and the trophy kids, but he didn't want to change his life like one iota. So here's me in Brisbane, don't know anybody. I've had a 4-week-old baby and all by myself because he was out working. He's in the advertising industry. So his thing to me was, it's part of my job that I go out networking and speaking and drinking till 3 o'clock in the morning. That's part of my job. While I'm stuck at home with a 4-week-old baby. So to say I was postnatally depressed is probably an understatement, but it was purely undiagnosed, and it's only in total hindsight that I look back and go, fuck, like, what a nightmare that was. Knew nobody, had no support. You know, mum and dad were close. They're on the Sunshine Coast, but they were still a good hour away, so it wasn't like I could just jump in and have coffee with them. So I didn't have a great mothering experience. I wasn't a great mother. I don't think, in hindsight, but I just think it was because of the situation. And plus I had this horrific baby who cried and didn't sleep because, for God knows, for the first 4 weeks of his life I was stressed because I was about to move into state. So I had a brand new baby and I was going to move into state. And, you know, he didn't, for the first 4 weeks of his life, he didn't even sleep in the same bed for more than two nights. So it was just horrible. So he was a nightmare and I was a nightmare and we just kind of lived in this existence. So anyway, I found a mother's group. I rang the community centre in tears going, I just need something. So they put me into this mother's group quite late. So I had that mother's group for about 18 months, which was good. And I made some really good friends. But the problem was I had a boy and they mostly had girls and one of them had this pissy little boy who used to sit down, but I had the boy's boy. So they would sit in the park with their beautifully well-behaved babies and I had this boy who would pick up toys and chuck them and run a mile and do all that kind of stuff. So I think he was about 18 months old and I was pregnant with my second baby when I got the phone call from my mother's group to say, actually, we don't want you as part of our group anymore because you have the feral child and you're a really bad mother and you don't know how to control your child. So that was nice. That was my whole support network in Brisbane gone. And I, you know, I was obviously just devastated and stuff. And, you know, pregnant with my second baby, I was also having a boy. So I had found out that I was having a boy. I think that's when they just went, holy hell, we can't have her with two boys in our mother's group. And they were all having second girls. So it was just. Jesus. It was just a nightmare made in heaven, and I solely wish that revenge would hit that woman that rang me and kind of, you know, orchestrated my
ousting. Probably has.
Mother's group, yes. That she's had a third child and who was this horrible boy who just, and you know what, they're not even horrible, they're just different, and it just, they just didn't know. So I had that. That was all very interesting. And, you know, even having a second baby, it was like at that point I was like, you know what, don't even want to have sex with my husband, just, but don't want to have an only child. Didn't want to be pregnant, didn't want to give birth. It was just, I was seriously just going through the motions of what I thought I had to in life, ticking a box. Here I am, I'm a wife, I'm a mother. Is this it? So, that kind of, so then I had my second baby and then I actually lived in a little townhouse complex in Brisbane. And one day, and this is just an example of how bad and how bored I was. I used to spreadsheet my son's growth charts and head circumference because I just needed some kind of normal, you know, some kind of doing something for me that was back into kind of work mode, but not. Like, God, looking back, I should have just started a business way back then and I would have been laughing, but I had no idea that that was even possible. So I ended up putting little notes around the community, that the little townhouse that I lived in, to say, you know, hey, I don't know anybody. You know, I've been ostracized from my mother's group. Is there anybody who wants to hang out at the pool on a Friday night and have drinks? And so I went to that first meetup and there was a couple of people there that were really not my kind of people. They were just, and so I went and I was polite and I think I had a glass of wine and came home. And then the following, and probably a month later, I just stopped going to what I'd organized at the pool. And then about a month later, this woman knocked on my door and she said, we're all at the pool having drinks and you organized it and you're not even there. And she said, come on over. And I went over. And there was probably about 10 women there. And by that stage, they were all expats. So we had moved into the townhouse complex really early. So, and then they'd built the rest of it as it kind of had progressed. And so I didn't know anybody from the rest of the townhouse complex. And then there's these 10 women at the pool absolutely getting on it. Like, the half of them were trashed and they were just like, they were from Melbourne and there were people from all over Australia, just, and from overseas as well. There were Brazilians and just this amazing community of women. And I was like, oh my God, thank the Lord that I have found some people that actually I can relate to. So they were my saviors. So I spent the next 2 years in Brisbane with these women and we just lived in, and we did, you know, all the cool stuff that I know you do now. You know, our mother's days were going out and drinking lunch, you know, drinking wine at lunch all the time. And we would start drinking at like 3 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, and the men would come home and we'd all be plastered, and the kids would just swim in the pool. And so it was lovely. So that was, it was really good then. I had a really nice 2 years in Brisbane. But then my son was actually getting to school age, and Brisbane was never going to be where we lived. So we decided to move back to Sydney. So when my eldest was 4 and my youngest was 2, we moved back to Sydney, and we moved back into our house that we owned. We did a bit of a stint with my ex's parents, and then we renovated our house a little bit, moved back into our house. Eldest son started school, and by that stage I went to work. I was so done. Like, I just, by that stage, you know, I had really got to my wit's end of just being a stay-at-home mum. So I found a little 3-day-a-week part-time job running an occupational therapist business. So I just went to their home office and was like their business manager, and I just ran their office. And I did that for probably about 6 to 8 months and just got my confidence back up. And then I was like, shit, I can do this. You know, like, I'd forgotten how easy it was to get back into work mode. And so then I was like, I'm just going to start my own business, because, like, I've just run their small business for 8 months, like, and it's easy. It's like a piece of piss. I can do this. So I was like, well, what can I do? Like, what skills do I have? I've only ever been a secretary or a PA. So then I discovered this woman. She ran this business called secretary.com, and she was going to franchise it. And so I talked to my husband, and I said, you know, I want to open a business, and this lady's going to franchise. And we went to all her franchise things and stuff. And then I was like, you know what? I actually don't need to buy her franchise. I could just do this myself, and there were so many restrictions around the franchise. You know, you could only market in this certain area and blah, blah, blah. So I was just like, oh, I could do this. So I thought I had this amazing, unique idea of being this admin person whilst I could stay at home. And then I started doing some research, and I realized that there was a whole world of virtual assistants out there. And I went, oh, what I thought was my massive brainwave was, you know, heaps of people already doing.
Yeah, I actually had the same thing when I had the Office Collective. I had this idea of a co-working space. I didn't have that word attached to it, but I'd had this idea, this picture of, like, people working side by side, you know, in a shared office environment. And then someone, when I was telling them the story, they was like, yeah, like co-working. And I was like, here I was thinking I was like a fucking genius.
Well, I was the same. I was like, oh my God, how great's this? And then I went, oh shit, there's a whole heap of people out there. So, but it was good, because then I went, well, you know what, if there's a whole industry out there, it means it's possible, and it means I can do it. So I jumped onto a heap of forums of other virtual assistants. And don't forget, this was July 2005. So it was 11 years ago. So virtual assistants weren't what they are today. There wasn't the Filipino market. There wasn't the overseas market. It was very much transcription-based, lots and lots of transcription, so medical, doctors, that kind of thing. So I just opened my doors on the 1st of July 2005 and went, here I am. And so to get my very first clients, I did a direct mail out. Like, I wrote a letter on my new letterhead that I'd had printed. And I had my fax machine, you know, like, I just can't believe how far business has progressed in 11 years.
Yeah.
But I had my fax machine, I had my computer, and I bought a desk that I'd assembled myself, like my IKEA desk that I'd put together, which I am still sitting at today, believe it or not, the same desk that I bought 11 years ago, I'm still sitting at. I can't believe it hasn't fallen apart because I put it together. And you know what? I wrote a letter on my letterhead, and I just mailed it out to all these people. And I got this phone call from this guy who was a private investigator, and they just needed somebody to do their report. So I went and had an interview with him, and he was like, yep, you've got the job. And so I spent the next probably 2 to 3 years driving a couple of suburbs away, picking up videos. So, like, the surveillance guys would watch the videos of the people. So it was all insurance based private investigation. So they'd be sitting in the cars stalking people who weren't meant to be using their backs or their necks or whatever, take video of them. And then I would watch the video and write a report about it. And then I'd get back in my car the next day and drop off reports and pick up reports. So he was my main client, and he just got my business off the ground running. So, and then it just grew from there. However, on a personal side, my beautiful marriage that was so wonderful from the start and so loving and caring and so close, it just got to the point where I was like, I'm done. So, and the catalyst for that was a girls' weekend away where I was going away for the weekend, and it was just like he was babysitting the kids, and it was, and then, you know, calling me and making me feel guilty and all this bullshit. And I just went, enough's enough. And I just came home from that weekend and I said, I don't want to be married to you anymore. And it took, he was like, oh, I'm going to change, blah, blah, blah. So we had another 3 months where we thought he might change, but he didn't. And then by October, I was like, I'm done. And I really remember a couple who were friends of ours, him going to the husband going, I can't believe that she wants to divorce me. And this guy said to my ex-husband, he goes, but mate, she gave you like, she told you 3 months ago that this is what she wanted. And you said I was going to change and you haven't. Like, duh. So it was kind of interesting. So that was October. Then we spent November, December still living in the same house and sleeping in the same bed, even though we knew it was all going to come to a head. That was pleasant. That was probably the worst 2 months of my life. And then he left. So I went to Queensland for Christmas, and by the time we got home, he'd moved out of the home. And it was amazing. Best thing I've ever done in my whole life. The kids changed instantly. I changed instantly. It was just like the whole dynamic of the house just completely changed. And this is just an example of, I'll tell you, can I give you some good examples of what he used to do?
Sure. Let's do it. Let's open up that can.
So when I first started my business, like in those very first few months, I remember sitting down on the weekend one day and I was asking him some questions about business stuff because, you know, he was an executive in advertising and blah, blah, blah. And he actually said to me, if you want to talk to me about your business, you're going to have to make an appointment because I just can't switch my brain on and off and talk business stuff with you on a Sunday when I'm meant to be relaxing. And I've just gone, what the fuck? So there were lots of little things like that that were, you know, that just added up. And then as we were getting to the really bad stage, he came home with flowers one day. And I actually looked at the flowers and went, oh, my God, he's trying to make an effort and I don't want him to make an effort, like I'm done and I'm out. And he handed me the flowers and he said, someone in the office got these, but they didn't want them, so I thought you would. And I just went, thank you, God, for letting him say that and letting me know that I am making the absolute right decision because you are not the person that I want to spend the rest of my life with.
Yeah. Thoughtful gifts are so great. I got a card once from a boyfriend who was very bad with communicating anything, really. And so this card, it was the first card he'd ever given me. We were together for 4 years. We lived together. It was Valentine's Day. And it had three stickers in it, a triangle, a square, and a circle. That was it.
How bizarre.
I know.
Yep. Yeah.
So I did the right thing too, leaving him.
Yeah. And I just remember that flower day going, oh, yeah, thank God. Like I really thought that you might be changing, but you haven't. And I'm so glad you made that comment because I'm so glad I made the right decision. And I have a girlfriend who's a psychologist. And at the time she said to me, you know, you're going to hurt a lot of people doing this. Is this what you want to do? And I said, yes. And she said, no matter how bad it gets. And I said, yep, no matter how bad it gets. And you know what? It gets bad. It doesn't matter how much you want to divorce. It gets bad. You hurt so, so many people. And, you know, hurting my kids was the worst. Like to tell them that we were going to split up was the worst thing I've ever done. And it still makes me incredibly emotional today to remember that time, to tell them that, you know what, we're not going to be together anymore. And the boys were 5 and 3. So the 5-year-old got it. Like he was, you know what? And I think the 3-year-old was just crying because the 5-year-old was crying and the 5-year-old was crying because I was crying. It was just horrible. But, you know, as another example of him, when we split up, he took the boys out for his first weekend on his own and he rang me and he said, I've never had the two of them together on their own. What will I do? Like, I'm outnumbered. And I was just like, that just shows, you know what, for 5 years, you haven't taken them out ever on your own. Like, you haven't been a father. And to everybody else, he was the role model father. Like, he was the soccer coach and the this and the that. So he did the outside appearances, just not the inside stuff. Anyway, so that was December 2005. So I started my business in July, and by December I was a single mum. So I had to make my business work. I had no choice. I had a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old and a business to run. And I just was like, I've just got to do it. And it did work. Like, I got enough money to keep me alive and to keep me paying the bills and to keep me in the house. And my business just grew and grew, which was really, really good and exciting. And I had lots and lots of challenges and lots of excitements and stuff. But, I mean, it was business was business. But I did it. And I was really, really proud of myself to do it. So that was really cool. But what I also did was I was suddenly had to discover who I was. You know, I knew what I didn't want, but I didn't know what I wanted. And I just had to go on this huge soul searching journey, because I just had never in my life really allowed myself to go, well, what do I want? What's going to make me happy? I'd done what everybody else wanted me to do. You know, I'd got married because he wanted to, and had kids because he'd wanted to. I'd just been that person who'd done everything because everybody else wanted to. And I suddenly went, well, shit, now I'm on my own. I've done something that I wanted to do. It was a really big fucking deal to do that one thing. Now what? So I went on a bit of a spiritual journey. I had always been a tarot card person, going to those people and having my palms read at markets and all that. Like, I used to just love that. I always used to go and see clairvoyants. And I did that, and I went to one clairvoyant one day, and she said, you need to explore this a bit more. She said, you have this intuitive gift. I used to just think that these clairvoyants said that to everybody. Oh, you've got this intuitive gift and da 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 da. Anyway, this one lady said, you need to go and explore what works for you. So I was like, okay, well, I'll explore what works for me, but I don't know how I'm going to do that. So I'll just try all this stuff. So I had angel cards, and, you know, I had some tarot cards, and then I started listening to this show out of the US called The Aware Show. And I don't even think it exists anymore, but it was just a podcasty kind of whatever they used to call it back then, before podcasting existed. I just listened. She used to have all different modalities on all the time talking. So I've got my notebook still of all this different stuff that, you know, colour therapy and aromatherapy, blah, 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 all this stuff. And then this one day this guy got on and he talked about this thing called theta healing. And it just sounded so normal and so great. And I just went, oh my God, I think this is my thing. And so I Googled Theta Healing Australia, and lo and behold, they're in Crow's Nest, which was like half an hour from my house. And I just went, okay. And then they were like, you know, you can do a course in this stuff. And I was like, okay. So I booked in, and I kind of used it as a gauge that if stuff came up that was on my child-free weekend, I would do it. And it was like kind of a sign that, you know, me pretending in my little new spiritualness, oh, this is a sign that I should do this because it's on my kid-free weekend. So the course was. So I took off, and I was just like, I was absolutely shitting myself. I had no idea what I was getting myself in for. I didn't know if I was going to, you know, be locked in some dungeon or part of a cult. Like, I was freaking out. I had no idea. And I got there, and there was probably about 10 to 15 people in the room, and a few of them were the real kind of hippie healers with the robes and the stuff. And I was like, oh my God, this is not me. And anyway, the guy who ran the course walked in. He just had these jeans on and a normal shirt, and he just talked like normal. And I was like, oh my God, this might be okay. And they started the session with a prayer. You know, everybody held hands in a circle and did a prayer. And I was like, oh, this is so not me. But by the end of the 3 days, I was totally hooked. In those 3 days, I had healed somebody. I had been healed myself. Like, I had this foot thing where nobody could touch my feet ever. Like, never could you even go within a meter of my feet. That was healed. Like, at the end of day two, somebody was massaging my feet and I had never had a foot massage ever. And then I had this amazing past life experience with one of the other students, and I was just like, I was totally hooked. I was, you know that when you see the Tony Robbins things and those people are just that pumped, euphoric. I was like that. I was just like, oh my God, I found my thing, and it's kind of normal. And the thing I love about theta healing is when you start to learn it, they say anybody can do it. There is no gift to this. It is, we all have it. We all have an intuition. It's just getting out of your own way and allowing the universe and the creator and whatever to do the healing on your behalf. You become this vessel. And that's what I loved. It was like, I wasn't different. I wasn't anybody different to who I was. I just suddenly had this amazing awareness. So that kind of took me on this real spiritual journey to do theta healing. I had also met a man, did the whole internet dating thing. So met this beautiful man by this stage. And we've been together for 10 years now. So that's like amazing. Like, I've been with him longer than I was even married, which is just bizarre. So then I was becoming this kind of spiritual person, but my old person was this real organized, efficient business person. And I hid my spiritual person, really. Nobody knew about the spiritual me except for my partner and my kids. Oh, and after the first course that I did, we were told, or it might have been the second course. Anyway, one of the courses I did right at the very early stages was all about angels and bringing in guides and stuff.
Yeah.
And so I sat my two kids up, who were still only really little. You know, mum's learning all this woo-woo shit. So sit here and I'm going to bring in your angels and I'm going to tell you what they look like. And my younger son had an invisible friend throughout school, and I just thought, well, you know, he's been through a breakup of parents and blah 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 blah. Anyway, what happened was when I tuned in to look at his angel, his guardian person, this invisible friend was actually a soul who hadn't passed over, who had been hanging out with Simon during his early years, and the very first thing that he wanted was to be passed through the light. So it was this horrible experience where I was all excited to show my two boys how spiritual I'd become and tell them all about their angels. And all I did was take my youngest son's best mate away because I sent him to the light and he never saw him again. So he was crying and I was crying and I'm like, I'm so sorry, I have to take him away, but he needs to go. And then we talked about it afterwards and he was like, I just used to see him at school. And I go, well, wasn't he like, didn't you think that he wasn't in a school uniform? And he'd go, no, he used to come to school in his school uniform. And I'd be like, oh, okay, so he actually must have a gift that he can see dead people or whatever. He's 15 now. He doesn't talk about it or do anything like that. But it will be interesting to see if later in his life he can come out and actually be really intuitive and stuff, which I think he will. But yeah, so here's me all excited about my new spirituality and I've just shat on my kids in 2 seconds. Another chick for being the world's best mum. Funny. And then so my biggest dilemma was, you know, here's me doing all this spiritual stuff it's not me, it's not who I am, I'm really practical, da-da-da. So my biggest fear, my biggest, you know, I've been doing it for 5 years now and it was like coming out of the spiritual closet. It was like, you know, what a gay person must have to go through to come out to the world to go, oh my God, this is who I really am. It's who I've always been. It's just you didn't know that this was me. Massive, massive. Like I had multiple Facebook accounts and I would only do this on one and I completely separated my personal and my, you know, and I didn't want my parents to know. It was just horrible. And I just, and I didn't really know while I was doing it. And then what happened was in 2012, a Japanese theta healer came to Australia to run a course called The Game of Life. And we were told that it was theta healing for business. And I was like, I've been a business owner for, you know, 7 years by this stage. I'm just going to rock this course. And I rocked up and I had, we have what you call in theta healing is beliefs. So you test beliefs and they give you all these beliefs to test. And I had every belief in the bloody book. Like, and by day two, I was crying before he'd even finished his introduction for the day. Like, it was just, he and I were just so similar in our journeys, and everything that he taught in that course, I was just absorbing like a sponge and go, and it was my, this is why I did Theta Healing. It was why I can mix my spiritual stuff with my woo-woo stuff, and I can help business owners to clear all their shit. And it was just like this amazing light bulb. So as soon as I did that course, I booked in to go and do the teacher's course with him. So I took off to Japan and went to Tokyo and did another course with him there a bit later on in the March of the following year. And by then I was just totally hooked, and it was like, okay, so, you know, this is what, this was my calling. This was what I was meant to do. This was my whole journey. And, you know, I love the Wayne Dyer book, I Can See Clearly Now. Have you read that book?
No, no. I'm shit. Like, I have boxes and boxes full of self-help spiritual books, and I never read them. No. Well, I know the book, but I haven't read it. I probably have the book.
Okay. Well, I was going to say I can send it to you. But it's really, really good in that it's Wayne Dyer, obviously, writing about his life, but it's I Can See Clearly Now. So here's what happened, but in hindsight, I can clearly see now how the universe orchestrated that so that I was here at this time to have that happen to me to do that. I do that now. Like, I look back on my marriage and my life and what I considered me being a shit mum and all this kind of stuff, and I go, I can see clearly now why I married that man. You know, I got two amazing, beautiful kids out of it. I needed to go through that divorce to experience who I am today. You know, I say to my partner today, if you had met me before, like the person I was before I got divorced, we would never be together, because I had to go on this amazing soul searching journey to be who I am today and to be this beautiful person that I am today, because I wasn't that. And I would never have done that if I hadn't have married this man and if I hadn't have divorced him. And, you know, so looking back, I haven't had a shit life. It wasn't overly great in parts, and I haven't had this huge drama, like, you know, I haven't been abused or anything like that. But it's just like looking at all these things, there's no regrets. I would, you know, I love everything that I did, and I can see clearly now why that happened and why I went here or I did that or I met that person, because it all comes back. And so even in my business world, you know, the clients that I worked with, so after the private investigator, I kind of niched into coaches and trainers. And then I worked out that being a virtual assistant was kind of the dollar for minute kind of thing, and that wasn't really my kind of thing. So I went into virtual PA. So I was running, being a PA to people in the coaching space. And then I got a keynote speaker as one of my clients. And then that was, as soon as I got him, I just niched right into that zone. And I was, all I did was work with keynote speakers. And then, you know, I've gone on to run a networking group where I need to get speakers. And, you know, like in that I can see clearly now, well, I had to work with speakers, so I know how the speaker world works, because I'm going to run a networking group so that I have speakers and I know how that all works. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just, I love how looking back, my life pans out to exactly where and why I was here today for all those reasons. Even though when you're in it, you think, this is totally shit. Like, how the hell did I get here and why did I even make these decisions? Well, I had to do that. I had to learn that lesson. I had to work with that person or be that person, you know. I don't know why the mother's group shat on me, though. I haven't really worked that one out yet.
So that's because that's so that you would create that group. So they shat on you so that you would be put those notes up around your townhouse thing, so that then you would attract your tribe, the real tribe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, cool.
So that's kind of me in a nutshell.
A 33-minute nutshell.
A 33-minute nutshell.
So let's talk a little bit about, like, tell me about what led you to start the Wellness Hubs thing.
Okay, so the Wellness Hubs thing started because when I did my very first kind of theta healing big course. So you go and learn it and then you go and do this massive 3-week course. And in that 3-week course, they hand out certificates and they go, off you go be a healer. And I'm looking around the room going, shit, all these people are amazing healers, but they don't know how to run a business. And so that was kind of my first light bulb moment before I'd done the Game of Life course, was that I can take my business skills and my energy woo-woo side and really start to help an industry of healers and wellness people to get their shit happening, get them really understanding business and get their world rocking. So what I did was doing business mentoring for these people. So, and then the wellness hubs kind of grew from that. So there was a local group where I was called the Northern Beaches Natural Health and Wellness Cluster. And it was just a little group that used to get together, which I was a part of and I became the president of. And then the guy who was running the ATMS, which is the Australian Traditional Medicine Society, he actually rang me and said, I would like to, you know, talk to you about how we can take what you're doing in that little group and get it out wider. So really he gave me the opportunity to say, well, what we're doing at a little local level, we could actually get out and reach a bigger, wider audience. So that's kind of, again, you know, the synchronicities of how that man got in contact with me is another really long story. And it was through a connection that of a guy I didn't even know and I didn't have any connection with, and the product he was trying to sell me was complete shit. And he plugged me to this CEO for about 3 weeks, to this top point the CEO rang me and goes, I need to talk to you. So, you know, that's the universe working to bring you what you need in complete unbelievable letting go of the how, so that all this stuff just unfolds that you couldn't have ever imagined.
Yeah, for sure. So let's fast forward to now.
Yeah.
What are you doing with yourself now?
So now I still run Wellness Hubs Australia, so that still ticks along. So they are networking groups around Australia for consciously aware business owners. They can get together, we have a guest speaker, they learn business skills and stuff around wellness. So that kind of just ticks along on the side. What I personally do is I do business mentoring for I call them consciously aware entrepreneurs. So exactly like you, somebody who is in the entrepreneurial space, you've got big dreams, but you've got that amazing woo-woo spiritual side to you who wants the healing and stuff. So it's mixing that real practical, here's how we can do this, here's how we can execute your ideas and your plans, but actually as all those fears arise, let's cut in and do some healing and really conquer those fears so that you can be the best version of you. So I do that with ad hoc mentoring. I do it through running retreats. So I take people away for a couple of days. We do a heap of business planning. As soon as we business plan, those fears just come up in a real massive way.
Smack you in the face, hardcore.
Smack you in the face and go, who are you to be doing this? And how do you think you're going to get your business to that? So we work on the healing and then we work in a bit of an execution plan before they leave the retreat. And then of course I do healings and kind of there's an online program around that. So you know, I know we talk a lot about fear in business. What I talk about is the subconscious stuff. So that's what I'm interested in. You know, everybody can talk about, you know, push through your fears and, you know, all those quotes that, you know, there's Oprah and Richard Branson, they all have those fear quotes. And we talk about all the time how fear is just such a thrown around word. What I'm really good at is helping people find the fears that they don't even know they had, and bringing the awareness to them so that we can shift those. So here's a perfect example of something like that, is that women in business today, a lot of them have a subconscious belief that they can't earn more than their partner because of this, you know, it's just been handed down to us through generations of, well, we're really the first generation of women who are stepping up and going, you know what, I'm equal and even better than my husband and I can earn more and I can be the breadwinner. I think this is the very first generation of our generation that can do that, because our mothers would have never have done that.
Well, some of our mothers had to actually get written permission to return after work when they were married. So it really is very new that, you know, that was never a possibility for my mother.
No, but then us ourselves wouldn't think that we have a subconscious belief that's stopping us from earning enough money, but that means I cannot earn more than my husband. So when I actually find that belief in women and I bring their awareness to it, they go, holy shit, no wonder my business isn't growing, because I get it to this certain point, which is close to his salary, and I can't get it anywhere above that because I've got this stupid belief. And that's a belief that is totally irrelevant in today's day and age and totally irrelevant for that person's life. So, but it's hidden and they don't even know it's there. So that's a really good analogy of what I do, is we go in hunting for those beliefs and finding them so we can shift them so people can be the best version of themselves. So it's a bit of woo-woo with a lot of practical.
Yeah, for sure. It is a lot of practical with a side of woo.
Yeah.
There's so many parts of your story that I relate to. And so I just wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, that integration of the two things. So, you know, for me, I felt like I've always been a bit woo, you know, even as a kid. I've loved witches, you know, I'm into that stuff. But what I aren't into is I don't like to fit into a box. Yeah. So when, you know, and I live in Byron and I'm surrounded by, you know, brown, various shades of brown, lots of lace, you know, all those kind of like, I don't know, cliche spiritual types. And I'm clearly not that. And I've felt called recently to study to be a high priestess. I don't think I've even told you this.
No.
But the part of me, I spoke to Julie Parker. Do you know Julie Parker from Beautiful You? I spoke to her recently. I'm going to get her on to do an interview. I spoke to her recently about it because she's studying to be a high priestess. And I was like, you know, I feel like that's who I kind of am already, like a kind of a high priestess. It sounds really weird saying this out loud. But I haven't ever wanted to do it because I don't want to do all the things that kind of come with that. So like like women sitting around in a circle or like running around a fire in the nude, you know, like all those things kind of come into my head. And I'm like, but that's not who I am. When I go to, and I've gone to a lot of those things, I've gone to, you know, sound healing things. I've done a lot of that stuff over the years. I've studied angel stuff. I'm attuned to Reiki, and most people who meet me and don't really know, or even people who know me, are still surprised by, you know, oh, you have a full moon ritual that you do, or, you know, oh, you do a new moon thing. And they're just like, they just don't put that and me together.
Mm.
So like how have you been reconciling that? Or is that something that you're still kind of struggling to integrate?
That was my biggest challenge. So when I said, you know, coming out of that spiritual closet, that was the thing that I really, really struggled with. How do I explain to people that I do this woo-woo stuff, but also, you know, am the person that I still always was? So I still do a lot of stuff without telling people. You know, like you don't have to go and broadcast that you do your full moon rituals. You know, it's just something that you do.
Yeah.
And you know, you could post it on Facebook, but you don't have to. And I'm very much, not that I'm hiding it, I just don't think people need to know all the woo-woo stuff that I do. Because I do it for me. I'm not doing it for anybody else. And like, I'm like you, like I wouldn't go to a bunch of women and, you know, dance around a fire naked. It's not my thing. It's not what I would do. I'd rather go to the pub and have a beer with those women afterwards and go, how great, you know, I'm glad you had a really good time. I don't need to do that. And I think what it is, it's being really comfortable with, and actually this is a lesson that I've learned, is that I thought I had to do yoga and I thought I had to do meditation and I had to love crystals to be this spiritual person that I am. And I think one of my biggest lessons has been actually, you know what, I don't. I can be just as connected and just as tuned in and just as intuitive and get just as much, you know, abundance and manifesting into my life through my spirituality, but not go to yoga. Or, you know, not, I hate crystals, you know. People give me crystals and they're not my thing. Crystals are not my thing. Essences are my thing. You know, fairies are my thing. I love fairies and I love make-believe and all that kind of stuff. And I have my little fairy garden outside my window and, That's my stuff. Like, even my meditation is my own form of meditation. I don't go to meditation classes and I don't hang out in those normal spiritual places, but I'm getting so comfortable with just going, stuff you. I don't have to conform to what your version of me is. And I can be as completely woo-woo as I want to be, but I'm just going to do it in my own terms.
Yeah, that's really cool. Anything else you want to add?
No, I was just going to say, and you know what? And fuck you if you think that that's, you know, not good enough for you. Because if you think that, then you're not the woo-woo people that I want to hang out with. And I have found an amazing tribe of people who are like me, like you, you know? That, you know, you said to me that the reason you worked with me was because I said I like angel cards and have a beer. You know, that struck a chord with you. So if I wasn't totally honest with that, we probably would have never have met. So when I'm totally like, fuck you, like woo-woo people, I don't have to conform to your version of woo-woo, then I just go, well, I can be whoever. Like if you looked at my office right now and nobody can see it because we're podcasting, but, you know, like there's the little spiritual image and there's my vision boards and there's a Japanese spiritual temple and there's a Buddha with this eggy kind of energy thing that I've been given, and there's a crystal that somebody gave me that I just put there because, you know, they told me that would be the right thing to do. And I actually have a disco ball. What are those?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's attached to my fan at the top of my office so that the energy of my business will radiate and shine out to the world through the disco ball.
I need to get one of those disco balls.
So I have all this weirdo stuff in my office, but they're the things that I like to do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool.
But you won't find me sitting on the beach doing a meditation or dancing nude around a fire.
A salute to the sun in a Kiva sauna.
No. And I also don't buy into the moons or the, you know, when people go, oh, but Mercury's in retrograde and all that stuff. I go, it doesn't affect me. I just don't buy into it. It's not my thing. And I don't think I need to buy into that. So, you know, and even saying this, people are going to be going, oh, my God, like how can she not believe in that? But you know what? I'm just really comfortable now with it doesn't matter. I can believe whatever I want to believe and I still know that I'm just as spiritual as the next person. And I can prove it because I can do amazing shit.
Time to kick up your feet and relax. It's on the couch. Biggest fear?
My biggest fear was coming out of the spiritual closet. Massive. It was huge. Took years. Yeah.
And what do you struggle with at the moment?
Around that?
Just in general, what's your kind of struggle at the moment? What are you pushing through?
My struggle at the moment is people negotiating with small business owners about price. That is really my bugbear at the moment, and it's really shitting me that consumers, clients feel that they can, and it's not just my industry, it's every industry, and I know that because I posted it recently in a group, that you know, every industry of women business owners is getting screwed over. Like we don't go to the supermarket and negotiate on our supermarket price. We don't go to the supermarket checkout with two milks and go, can I just pay for one? So don't come to me and go, well, I can see that your service is $150 an hour, but I can't afford that. So how about we just do it for $100? It, you know, I don't understand that mentality that people feel that they can negotiate with a small business owner. Yeah. It's a non-negotiable. So that's really frustrating me at the moment, and it's something that I need to push through and get over because I'm just going to keep attracting it the more I hang on to it.
Yeah, totally. I actually don't get those anymore, but I have in the past, and it was really hard, particularly in startup phase. I think it's not even in startup phase, but in those moments where you're having, you know, the ebb of your business and, you know, you're having a little bit of a dry spell perhaps, and then someone comes to you and offers you less than what you would usually accept, and then you say yes, then you really just,
you blow the bar.
Yeah, yeah. And for me now I just say, come back to me when you've got whatever. Come back to me when you value what I do.
And also the swaps, you know, let's trade, let's do a swap. Yeah. No, you know, I don't do that. I'm much rather, even if our service is exactly the same price, I would rather pay you for yours and you pay me for mine.
Yeah, because I've had that too. I've had people contact me and say, you know, you could do my course on this and I'll do Radcasters for free. And I'm like, no, because if you don't pay for it, you're not going to value it. And if I don't pay for yours, I'm not going to value it.
Exactly.
That's the way it is.
And so I guess the other side of the coin is if people, other business owners stop doing that, then how much better off would we be? Because I think there is a certain level of business owner who is doing that negotiating, who is setting it up for the rest of us. And then the rest of us who are saying no are going, you know, oh, well, you're an asshole because you're not lowering your price. Actually, no, that's my price. I've got 11 years business experience. If you can't afford that, go somewhere else.
Mm. Yeah, there's plenty other people out there.
Yeah.
Failure. What does failure mean to you?
Failure means to me going into my cave for a couple of days, doing lots of crying, and then bringing myself back up again and getting over it. So I'm really learning that failure is something that is totally relevant to who it's happening to, that whoever's experiencing something is in that real shitty spot. But I think it's totally okay to let yourself feel that, because if you're really disappointed about something, you know, if something that you created didn't come off or whatever, you know, it's okay to go, actually, you know, I'm going to feel a bit shit about that. As long as you put a little time constraint on that and don't feel shit for 6 months around that and don't resent that, you've got to have that up at the end of it. I think failure is something that helps us grow. I think it's totally necessary. I think there is a positive in every failure, and I really try and look for my positives in every failure, but I have to sit in that shit first. And I, you know what, I'm allowed to do that too. I'm allowed to have a day on the couch feeling sorry for myself and eating, you know, whatever I want to eat because I just go, fuck the world because this happened to me. But then go, okay, then I go the next day, right, you know, what can I learn from this? What can I change? How can I make this different? And I just, you know, all those big entrepreneurs are, you know, all the quotes, failure is just a step, blah, 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 blah. It is. But when you're in it, it sucks. So allow yourself to be in it, but then get out of it as well.
Yeah, for sure. Don't let it own you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have, you know, I've had a friend going through something really horrible in her personal life, and we were talking about, you know, the phases that you go through when you lose someone, or, you know, you have like a big failure, and then there's like the grief stage, and then there's the anger stage. And I think often we either don't allow ourselves to feel it, which brings up all this shame stuff too, because it's okay to feel grief and it's okay to feel anger. Like, they're human emotions that we should be feeling. And when we suppress them, it's a terrible thing for our bodies, for our minds, for, you know, it's just shit. So you have to move through, well, you have to move through it, not sit in it for an extended period of time. Because when you sit in it, that's when it takes control of you.
Yeah, but allowing yourself to feel it, like, especially death, you know, like losing someone, that's horrendous. And, you know, and I know when we lost someone recently, you can't understand how everybody else can be functioning. Like, you just go, I used to drive my car and go, how can you people just be supermarket shopping? Yeah. How can you be walking down the street when everything in my world has fallen apart? But you get over that and you get through that. That's like shock. And then you go through grief. And I think it's knowing those phases in those big instances of, you know, I just have to work through this and I have to allow myself to feel that. Because exactly right. If you don't, you're not going to grow and you're not going to come out the other side. It's the journey that you take. You know, especially with death, you go through the shock, you go through the grief, you go through the anger, you do. You go through those phases. And it's just I think it's that allowing yourself to be in it, but observing yourself in it at the same time, and allowing and having that allowance, but knowing that you're doing that for a purpose, which is difficult, but it is possible.
Yeah.
And having gone through my divorce, you know what, I kind of go, it gets, you know, I say to people, but divorce was the best thing ever, you know, totally, highly recommend it to anybody who's in a shit marriage. Like, I'm the biggest advocate for it. But you know what, at the time,
it's
it was
fucking suck.
It it's going to fucking suck.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've just coached, not coached, but, you know, helped a friend get through it. And I said to her, it's going to be tough. And my psychologist friend said that to me too. It's going to be sucky, but it gets better. And that's with anything.
Yeah, for sure. So we all have, you know, a recurring evil bitch in our head telling us multiple untruths about ourselves. What does yours say?
Mine's that comparison trap. So I just, you know, look what they're doing. Look how great they are. Who are you to be helping people in business when, you know, you don't know everything? And, you know, if I have a really shitty day, well, how can you be telling people that in your business when you don't have all your shit together? So I think that as a business mentor is probably one of the toughest. Like, you know, who are you to be telling somebody this? But part of being a mentor is I'm just sharing my advice and my external opinion as well.
Yeah, for sure. I totally agree with that. I had someone in a group that I run asked was saying about how she is doing all these courses so that she's ready to start doing what she wants to do. And I was like, I pulled her up on it. I said, what you're actually doing is called education procrastination.
Yeah.
You already have all that you need. You just don't really believe that you do, you know. And it's like, yeah, you can keep learning and learning and learning and learning. All you need to be able to do is provide something of value to somebody else. That's it.
Exactly. And you just have to be a little bit ahead of them or have done something a little bit different to them. And, you know, it could just be two people from different industries sharing same content. You know, I did this in my industry, try it in your industry. That's mentoring. You know, it's just giving advice. It's giving that external opinion. But that bugbear in your head is, you know, who are you? Like, you know, should I be earning squillions of dollars to wait to then be mentoring other people? No, but that's what the evil person inside says.
Yeah, totally.
You have to wait until you're Richard Branson and then you can
mentor. And then you can mentor. But then you'll be so rich you won't even want to be mentoring. You'll just want to be scuba diving.
Yeah.
Okay, so two more questions. What is success to you?
Success is happiness. Success is, it's not even a figure, it's not an amount, it's happiness. And I feel successful because I know I'm happy and I've worked really, really hard to be happy. I've gone through a lot of shit in my life to make sure I am happy, and I really try and manifest happiness into my life and appreciating all those little moments. And we talk about feeling a lot, but really feeling that, like, just, you know, if I go for a walk in the morning, just feeling like, oh my God, like, I've got this beautiful man, I've got these great kids, and I've got a business, and, you know, how lucky am I? That's success to me. You know, yes, I'd love to be debt free and I'd love to not have a mortgage and all that, like, that is monetary success, and I guess that would be the tick of the box. But really, I think I am successful, and anybody is successful, A, if you can keep going in business. And I think 11 years in business is successful, you know. Most people die in the ass after 1 or 2 years. So to say I've run my own business for 11 years, yeah, even now I'm like, holy shit, I've run a business for 11 years, you know.
I know, it's weird, isn't it?
It's a long time. Yeah, because when I go to networking functions and somebody goes, well, I've been doing this for 6 years, you think, oh, wow, that's good.
Yeah, I know. I had Lisa Corduff, who you know as well, come and stay with me and her husband, and we were just having a conversation and I was saying, oh, you know, I started Killer Copy when I was, you know, 26 and blah, 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 13 or 12 years ago, whenever it was, or I think I was 27. Anyway, so I was just telling the story. And then I said, oh, you know, but I wish I had started early. And he was like, 26 is early. You know, but you just forget because it's your story. It's like you're just in it. And that's the whole thing about the mentoring thing too, right? It's like, or even just what you can provide in value to somebody else. It's like most people are so far in their own shit, they just need guidance that doesn't come from all up in their head.
Yeah.
You know, because they can't see the forest for the trees. So sometimes you just need somebody to show you the forest.
I use the beautiful analogy that mentoring is like swimming in the ocean. So, you know, when you're swimming in the waves and then this bird comes across and dives just in front of you and pulls out this massive fish and then flies off. And you're like, shit, I couldn't even see that fish.
Yeah.
Well, the mentor is that bird, you know, they're flying over your business and looking at all the fish around you going, check this out, pick this fish up. You just can't see it. And we're all the same. Because it's so easy to tell other people what to do when you're not in it. But when you're in it yourself, that's why mentors are so important for everybody, you know, because we all need that external person to show us what's just right in front of us that we can't see.
I always use the octopus on the face thing, you know. It's like the tentacles are just around your eyes so you can see out, but everyone looking at you can see you've got a fucking octopus on your face. Yeah, so it's about, yeah, shining a mirror sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And last question, what is freedom?
Oh, freedom is doing whatever you want to do, whenever you want to do it. And you know what? That is running a business. You know what? If I want to go walk the dog, I can go walk the dog. There is no way I could go back to being an employee. No way at all, because I just, like, I watch my partner go to work every day and, you know, clocks on and clocks off, and I just go, I couldn't do that anymore. I do washing, I hang the washing out, you know, I have lunch. Like, I work really hard, but I have freedom. Like, I have total freedom. I pick the kids up from school, all that kind of stuff. That is freedom for me. Just not having somebody tell me what to do and not having a boss. Totally love it.
The plug. Instead of filling the podcast with self-promotion, we're being totally transparent. Here's the plug.
So the best place people can find me is at theheartof.com.au. So theheartof.com.au.
The takeaway. Exercises or tips for positive change, sprinkled with salt and vinegar, wrapped in newspaper and handed over the counter from our special guest to you.
My takeaway after talking about my story is, you know what, if you're in that place where you just go, I don't want to be here, and you're scared to do it. So I went to my son's year 12 graduation and this woman came up to me, she said, guess what, I'm leaving my husband. And I just, like, totally out of the blue, and I was like, what the? And she said, yep, you know what, he's my last child, I've got him through the HSC and now it's my turn. You know what, don't wait for that perfect moment, like, do it now. I think my tip for everybody is you are the most important thing and other people will adapt. And when you look after you, yes, you may hurt some people, but you know what? Those people that love you will then come back and support you and you'll have a, you know, I wasn't going to leave my husband. I was going to stay in that relationship because for the kids, you know, everybody goes, oh, do it for the kids. And one of my best girlfriends said to me, do you want your sons growing up thinking that that's the role model of a husband? And that was at that point that I went, actually, no, I don't. I need to do this for me and I need to do this for him and them. And best thing, you know, I can't say it enough, best thing I ever did, I looked after me first, I decided what I wanted and I just went, I have to do this for me, regardless of what I do. So if there are people listening to this who are in that situation who are going, but I'll just wait, or it's not that bad, or, you know, and it doesn't, and I guess that's my other point too, and something I'm passionate about, it doesn't have to be an abusive relationship. Mm. Like, you can just be unhappy and still go, you know what, I don't want to live in an unhappy life.
Yeah, I don't, yeah, exactly. It's like, I hate my job. Okay, so let's do something about that. You know,
yeah.
I hate where I live. Well, do something about that. You know, I think sometimes we can see things as a prison when they're not necessarily. Well, they're never really, unless we allow them to be so.
Exactly.
And there's always an escape route.
Always. And people will go, but you know what, I've got the good house and I've got the nice husband. And but if you're not happy, do something about it. You have to be happy. And, you know, that's when you said, what's the most important thing? Happiness. If you're happy, the whole, you know, it just makes life so much easier. That's your happiness and your freedom. And if you're not in that space, do something about it.
Cool.
Just take that first step to doing something about it.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for tuning in to the Carlosophies podcast with me, Carly Nimmo. Let's continue the conversation at carlynimmo.com. If you were a big fan of the podcast, I'd be stoked if you left a review. And if you want to hear more radness just like this, be sure to subscribe and spread the word. In the meantime, be real, be rad. Peace out.